You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Listen, honey. So this podcast is for all of my amazing listeners who enjoyed the interview I had a few weeks back with Miss Angela Johnson. She is a ferocious comedian, an amazing woman of God. I'd love to invite another female comic into the room because I just think, honestly, it takes so much, I was going to say balls, but it doesn't just take balls. It also takes ovaries to be a female comic. So I really wanted to invite Ali Makovsky into the room because I think that her work is phenomenal. And I wanted to get into her brain and understand why she chose to be a comic and what it takes to be a comic in today's world. Show. Today's a cool day. Today's you're outnumbered, Dennis. You got some girl power in the room.
Yeah, there's a lot of females here. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Watch out.
A lot of hot girls.
Watch out.
Oh, thank you. Hot girls. I don't know, Lisa, you look cracking, man. Just,
thank you, Dennis.
So, Dennis, tell me how we found our way to Ali here, who is sitting in the room. Ali, our comedian friend.
Honestly, I've always like watching comedians. Like, I secretly want to be a comedian.
Oh yeah,
no,
yeah.
I can't. I could never.
That's
could
how
never.
It starts.
Yeah, actually, no. It's funny. I don't want to be a comedian because I think it's the hardest job in the world to make people laugh.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like, I feel like it's a lot of pressure.
Totally.
That I would be afraid to do, and so because of that, I think you guys are superheroes, and I watch you going, oh shit. The fact that you can time and command laughter is a gift.
I definitely wouldn't call myself a superhero by any means, but yeah, I get where you're coming from. I still get scared of that. Like, I don't get scared to perform. I get scared that, like, I just won't be able to do it. Like I have no problem going on stage. There's no, like, nerves about performing, but it's like, what if this just doesn't work? What if I thought that this was going to be funny and then I get up there and it's just like crickets?
Right, right. Yeah. In fact, I think one of the first things I saw on one of your YouTubes was you walking on stage and starting right off about your voice.
Yeah.
Saying, guys, this is it. This is how I sound.
Yeah.
This is all you're going to get.
Yeah.
Which is hilarious because you have to be mad aware, self-aware when you're a comedian to be able to make fun of all the shit that other people are already making fun of you about.
Yeah. Well, I didn't even realize that my voice was weird or like different until I started doing comedy. Like when I first started comedy, you know, because I've had all my friends before I started comedy for like my whole life. So they're used to hearing my voice. It doesn't sound weird to them. And then when I started comedy, I met all these new people and it was their first time meeting me, hearing me, talking to me, whatever. And everyone would be like, oh, you're so like monotone. Like your voice is so like just dry and monotone and like robotic. And I was like, oh my God, like I never knew it. And then I became so insecure about it. I was like, I have to address this. Cause sometimes still, I don't really do that joke too much anymore, but sometimes still when I'm performing like halfway through a set, I'll just start to like hear my voice and be like, oh yeah, like this is what they're hearing right now. Like my voice is so dull and like dry, but it's fun.
My mom every like every 3 to 4 months, my mom will always like hit me up to try to help her recover her password.
Oh God, right? It's like the ongoing question and how, what my password, Dennis? I don't remember and I don't get to Google.
Yeah, and she'll hit up the assistants. Anyways, it's funny because this time we had to actually like reset the password and then they asked you the security questions and stuff like that. And she's one of the security questions was, what is your dream job, right? And like snap call, she's like, I want to be a movie star.
Oh my gosh, so, I love that.
No, so I learned that about her and I was like, wow, man, we really need to make, because she's 6 years old. She's kind of blowing up on Instagram. She's kind of a big deal. We get stopped everywhere. She gets stopped before, like,
no way.
I love my mom. We're with, like, famous people,
you know, like,
beyond.
She'll get stopped.
I've been pushed over at airports to get to her.
I think she has
Costco. Yeah. It's a wrap. I will get hit by so many.
Oh my god.
Shopping carts just to get to Mama Mai.
Yeah,
they
love
her.
That's so cute.
Yes. So it's funny to me that she actually said blatantly that she wants to be a movie star.
A movie star. Yeah, those succinct words, right? And then she's like, she's very funny, and she always wants us to like write for her or something like that, or like it's hard, but we don't know how to write for her.
Yeah,
it's just weird. Anyways, when did you know that you wanted to be a comic?
Well, kind of what you were saying, where like I was just so, I like secretly was like, this is what I want to do. And when I was little, I started out by, I was like in third grade, I was 7 years old, and I called into Kiss FM, which is like, you know, the biggest pop radio station in LA. And I ended up like getting through, I was talking to Ryan Seacrest, I'm 7 years old, and I was just being like, precocious. He kept being like, you're only 7, you're so precocious. And I'm like, I have no idea what that means. And so he just like kept talking to me. My parents are gone, like I'm just getting ready for school with my sister, and they offered me a job to work there. So I worked
at
on
seven.
Wow. Yeah, 7
doing
years old.
What, Ellie?
Making prank phone calls.
Wow.
Yeah,
so you naturally had the gift of gab, and also just you were already
kind of a
funny.
Yeah. And I didn't even realize it at the time because I was so young. I was just like, this is just how I talk with my family and friends. You know, I'm like the youngest of 3. And so I'm just always like trying to get my voice heard, trying to get attention, saying whatever I can to like, you know, have people notice me. And once I got that job, I was like, oh, this is like a thing that people can do as a job. Like, I just want to keep doing stuff like this. And so after that, when I was in high school, I got super into stand-up, and I would go to the Laugh Factory all the time using my sister's
who
ID
were you
to get
in. In high school, who were you watching at the time?
I was like watching Chris D'Elia obsessively on YouTube.
I don't know who that is.
Chris D'Elia?
I've never heard of that.
No idea.
He's like the super handsome comedian with the curly hair. He was in season 2 of You on Netflix.
She said handsome. I'm Googling because I want to see what you think is handsome.
Anyway, he was the Laugh Factory was putting out all of his videos on their YouTube. So I started watching those. He was also on Vine when Vine was really big, and he was making funny Vine. So I was like pretty much stalking him and going to the Laugh Factory and seeing all of these great comics.
Wow.
And then I finally just built up the courage. I talked to one of the comics after the show.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, I want to do this, but I'm 17. I'm not even old enough to be in this club right now. And I want to do comedy, but I don't even know what to write about.
We've totally seen this guy. He's hot,
right,
by the
yeah,
way.
Yeah, yeah,
he
that's
looks
what
like
I'm
a
saying.
Guy on the cover of like a romance novel.
Yes.
He's got long hair, a little 5 o'clock shadow.
Yeah, like he'd be on a horse topless.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So, and it's crazy because I was like, so, I mean, I'm still very obsessed with him. I have to like watch myself because this was a huge deal for me. He followed me back on Instagram.
Ooh.
I would consider us acquaintances in some way, you know? And so I have to like limit how much I'm reacting to his stories, because I'll always be like, LOL, ha ha ha. And then I'm like, I need to take a breath and chill. But yeah, it's cool just to like see those things that like before I started comedy, the idea of, you know, me even knowing him just was like so far-fetched. And so now to like be where I'm at is really cool.
How many years would you say you professionally put into being a comic?
5 years. Yeah, I started when I was 19. So I did my first open mic when I was like 17 or 18. And then I like kind of went off to college. I knew I wasn't going to go. But when I was on the radio, a lot of my money was put into a college fund. So I'm like, I might as well just give it a shot, you know? And my parents were so sweet to think that I was going to go to college when I was that young. But yeah, I gave it a shot. I ended up just like dropping out because I really wanted to do comedy. And
same, by the way. I started out in school I went to college to try to make my parents happy because when you get out of high school, it's a very daunting moment because everybody's in different directions, knowing exactly where the fuck they're going to go.
Yeah.
They've got the plan. They've got the college in mind, they've already got maybe plans to move, and when you don't know where to go, the first thing you do is you make up some shit to act like you got somewhere to go to.
Yeah,
I'm going to De Anza. Of course, I'm going to De Anza because I'm going to go figure out what it is I want to do. It's so weird. And when you know you don't want to be in college, every day is painful in class. because you just, you're like, I don't want to be here. I need to be busy doing exactly what I already know what I want to do.
Yeah, I definitely gave up on school.
So
like,
interesting.
After freshman year, I was like, I don't want to do this. Like, you know, I enjoyed going to school, kind of. Yeah. But I just knew that I wanted to do something that, like, didn't involve academics.
Yeah, and not knocking college at all.
No.
But there are just certain people where you know already the field you want to jump into and get cold started.
Yeah.
So I don't knock that experience either of getting right into it.
Yeah. And I had done my first open mic when I was still in high school. And so after I did that first open mic, like, it was over. Like, anything else that I could have thought of doing after that was just, like, out, you know? And so I just knew, like, when I was in college, we'd all be at, like, college parties and everyone would be like, what's your major? What's your major? And people are like, you know, broadcast journalism, communications. Right, and I was like, I'm going to be a comedian. And everyone was
Did you really say that?
Yeah. People would just be like, okay.
Is that because of is that because she's a millennial? Are you a millennial?
I think I'm Gen Z.
Oh, motherfucker. Are you
Gen Z? I'm like right on the cusp.
What's Gen Z again?
1995 and forward.
Funny. Yeah. So do you think it's because of her age and more emerging female comics, not that we're anywhere breaking, that they can do, she can do that? Because I don't think you would have been able to say that in my time.
Yeah. Well, you know what I think it is? I think it's because, like, social media has made everything seem more accessible, whether it's, like, becoming a YouTube vlogger, like, even that is a career now. So I think, like, seeing people on Vine, seeing people on Twitter, on Instagram.
And now TikTok.
Yeah, and now TikTok.
Wait, do people still use Vine?
No.
Vine got sold or something and it went out.
That's twice.
It, like, hit hard and then it was pieced out.
Yeah.
Like MySpace. No, MySpace hit harder for a while.
I did. I had my sister made me a MySpace when I was in fifth grade, and I was just, like, following her friends for a while.
Right.
And then I had, like, MySpace boyfriends. This one guy who was, like, 2 years older than me at school.
Ooh.
And he had My Chemical Romance as his song on his profile. And I was like, he's so dark and edgy. And, like, I'm going to be his little, like, preppy girlfriend.
Totally. Wait, were you a part of the emo era at all?
Yeah. But I watched it. I watched it from afar, and I did get...
How do you watch and not partake? I don't understand.
Because I was only in, like, sixth grade,
so
I couldn't really be actively in it. And the girls in my grade who were actively in it, like, I think have, like, 5 kids now due to that era.
Wow. Allie, I'm going to these emo shows. Like, it's come back.
Do you go to emo night?
Yes.
Okay,
it's a big deal for
me. I still haven't been.
So that's one thing.
I'm surprised there's Gen Zers there. Like,
Yeah. Everyone's into it.
That's one thing people don't know about me is I hella loved the emo era. Like, I think I brought my brothers into it, actually.
Wow.
Like, listening to AFI and Dashboard Confessional and all that. Like, I definitely went through the woe is me.
It's so good. And I remember everyone was getting their bangs, like, the super side swoop. So I started doing that with, like, a really long swoop.
Yep. And you would let your eyeliner just get super soppy.
Smudge. Yeah.
Yes.
It was beautiful. Yeah.
Okay. So you decided to go straight into comedy.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, once I dropped out of college, my parents kind of knew that that wasn't going to work out for me, but they're like, you might as well just go. And so I signed up for Birthright, which is that trip where you go to, like, Israel for a week if you're Jewish.
Another tribe member.
She
just mentioned that. We're like, what the hell are you talking about?
Yeah. Oh, my Jewish assistant is jumping around.
Yeah, my dad's Jewish, so I'm a little half breed. And I got to go to Israel for, like, a week, and I was like, man, I love it here. It's so beautiful. I love the people. And I hadn't really traveled that much at that point, so I'm like, this is so exciting. So I was going to join the Israeli army. And once I got out, I would be 21, so I was like, I'll have structure, routine.
You really wanted to do this.
They absolve
all your sins, too, right? Like, if you have any crimes against you.
Oh, I don't know. I didn't have any crimes at the at that time, but now that I know, I might go back. I wanted to go because I was like, I want to live here. I want to, like, do something. Because it's not like, you know, you have different jobs if you're in the army. It's not like I would just be out like, I figured I'd, like, be a medic or something, have some life experience, some structure, get out when I'm 21, start doing comedy after that. And I told my mom, who's not Jewish, and she just started weeping. She was like, just do comedy full time and live with me. And I was like, okay.
Wait. Brain alert. That is the genius way to present your parents a path that might not be favorable to them, present to them a lesser popular option.
Yeah, be
option.
Like, I could either get killed in the Middle East or I could That's follow funny. My heart. Right.
And, cut to, if you go to Ali Makovsky's Instagram, her bio says, I'm still on my parents' insurance for 2 more years.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. My 26th birthday is going to be terrible.
That's hilarious, man.
That
it's
is
gonna be
funny.
Awful. Yeah.
So then what happened?
So then I moved into my mom's house and started doing comedy. So then I've been doing comedy now for a little over 5 years.
When it comes to all the stickiness today with appropriation and, you know, so many groups to offend, how do you function around that? That's another reason why I give you guys a superhero cape.
Yeah.
Because the offensive parts is where it's funny.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we're at a different time now.
Totally.
Where I don't even know if you remember what it was like before when people were breaking rules left and right, making fun of gays and going for every group of people that you could possibly offend.
Yeah.
Nowadays, I mean, it can completely ruin your career. How do you take to that?
I mean, it's like it's almost with like any job that's in the spotlight now where you can just say one thing and then it's all over. I think with comedy, you know, I don't know. I try to avoid things that are, you know, sensitive topics that don't involve me in any way. There's certain things that I say that might offend people, but I'm always, I mean, anything can offend anyone at this point.
Have you offended anybody yet?
With my stand-up, no.
Okay. I feel like that popping of the cherry, that's when you get a good dose.
Yeah.
And I say this meaning like very humbly. For me, working in television, I thought because my whole life, it started out with makeovers for people. How can you offend anybody?
Yeah.
Being very just honest and helpful towards their new journey.
Yeah.
Then going into now, I guess you would say a little bit more of a reality sense of the world where I go into a talk show where I talk about my real experiences. And then I have a YouTube channel where I talk about my own family experiences. It's also me. You think you can't offend anybody. But I have.
Oh, yeah.
And when you do that first time,
it hurts.
It hurts.
Because you feel it, because it does feel like when someone calls you out for something, it almost feels like they know you better than you know yourself. And so they're going, oh, you're being mean to this group of people. And you're like, oh, my God, am I like one of am I someone who is like
and
that and who is hateful? And
categorized as a hateful or racist or whatever it may be. Cancel culture then ensues.
Yeah.
And you think, wow, I fucking did all this for this long of time. And now you're going to completely cancel it because of one statement or one tweet.
Yeah.
And then I've also been on the other end where I've read a tweet or something that someone said that was super malicious. And I'm like, yo, I can't fuck with you now. I actually can't see this past you. Mm.
But
you
know
what I mean?
But I think the difference between like, I think also because I've had people like say things to me over Instagram or Twitter or whatever. And so I try and just realize that that's a small group of people who, you know, are just like banding, teaming together to like, you know, not be into me or whatever.
Right.
It's only a small group of people. It's not that big because it does feel like overwhelming and like everything's over. And it's like, it's just a small little thing. It'll blow over. But also I think it's like just knowing who you are and like what you stand for. And like, that's ultimately the most important thing. But yeah, I just talk about myself. So if you're offended, it's like, oh, you just don't like me and that's fine.
Yeah.
You don't have to.
Yeah.
I also want to talk about the stigma that comes behind being a comic. So when I was single, a lot of my friends were telling me, do not date a comic because that's like, have, you know this, right?
Oh, yeah.
So before,
I did not know that.
I've received that advice and I've also not listened to it many times.
Ooh, okay. Well, I want to come back to this. Let's take a quick break, then we'll come back to Allie's dating life and whether or not you should date a comic.
Hey guys, it's Cheyenne Davis. You may know me from MTV's Teen Mom OG or Think Loud Crew podcast. I'm here with my dad, Papa Floyd, to tell you about our new podcast, Unfiltered Kitchen.
The kitchen is the hub of the household for many of us. The one-stop shop for conversations both big and small. Cheyenne and I have been having open conversations about all aspects of life in our kitchen since well before she was able to see over the counter.
And now we're inviting you into our own kitchen as a part of the family.
Unfiltered Kitchen is a two-way street. I share my advice on cocktails, cooking, parenting, and the lessons I've learned.
And I inform my dad what it's like to raise kids today, how generational barriers affect us, and the joys of being a daughter. Well, your daughter.
Get ready for a whole lot of unfiltered advice. You can take it or leave it, but you're never going to leave this table feeling hungry for more.
Listen to Unfiltered Kitchen wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back to Listen, Hanai. We are with the amazing, talented comedian, Ali Makovsky. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. So we're talking about dating comics. There's a huge stigma out there, and this is weird that you don't know this, Dennis.
No, I didn't know that. I know athletes, I don't know, like rappers, something like that.
Yeah, no. So there's athletes, rappers. He looks at me, he drops his voice. No, but there are stigmas about people in their field that, like, you know, that are not the most positive. But for comics, I heard specifically that they're dark, that they're tormented because they have to be in order to make fun of themselves and make fun of the things around them.
Yeah, I have a hard disagree on that.
I don't get that feeling from you. Usually there's supposed to be some trauma behind them or like some kind of like abuse or some, or I don't know.
Sure. In order to be a comic, to be able to make fun of things, right?
That's what people say. Yeah. And I think that like there is some truth behind that, but sometimes people come up to me and they'll find out I'm a comedian. They're like, ooh, I bet you had like a really rough childhood and it's like just such a weird, uncomfortable thing to say to someone. That's like, you know, oh, I heard you do podcasts, like, I bet, you know, like it's such an uncomfortable and personal thing to say. And I don't necessarily agree with it because I think that there are people who do comedy, especially now that there's like more people, it seems like, than there ever has been trying to make it in comedy. And I think that they come from like all different walks of life. I think what it ultimately is comedy comes from a place of like wanting to be heard and like seen. And so whether that comes from like childhood trauma or whatever, like, it doesn't have to necessarily come from that. I think it's just this like place where you just want your voice to be heard in some way. So whether it comes from like a dark place or a light place, like I think everyone can kind of relate to that feeling of wanting to come up with something and have other people be like, oh, I like that, you know?
Right. And do you think dating comics, have you gotten into that world yet? Because there's a lot of men.
God, I don't know if I'd call it dating, but I have definitely hung out naked with some comics. And especially when I was like first starting out, you know, because it's so exciting.
Are you being serious?
Oh, dead serious. Yeah, yeah.
Why are you hanging out naked?
I mean, I'm talking about hooking up. I was just trying to do it in a cute way.
Horizontal mambo.
Yeah. No, just casually naked, hanging out with people.
With your tit out.
No, I mean, like, when I first started comedy, it was super exciting, and there were so many new people that I was meeting, and I always, like, I have a problem falling in love with people, like, as soon as I make eye contact with them.
You do?
Yeah, but I also, like, fall out of love in 5 minutes. Oh, so God, it's like, I'm very infatuated.
That
easily.
Second part is important.
So there were, like, a lot of people who I was hanging out with, and because I was doing open mics every single night, I was seeing these people and getting to know them in, like, you know, a really personal way. And so I started, like, hooking up with other open micers because I'm like, oh, these guys seem like they probably won't stick around for a long time, so I won't have to deal with that later.
Yeah, they're not going to make it. That bit sucks.
That's funny. Wait. Okay, so what would you base it on? Would you base it on whether or not they were good? Or, I mean, as far as they're funny, do they have to be funny for you to then sleep with them? But then if they were funny, you wouldn't think that they would be booted off by next week. So how does that work?
So there's like a balance, because if I watch someone do comedy and they're not funny at all, I'm like, I could never like picture this happening in any way.
Okay.
So there has to be like some amount of funniness, but also like they probably have like a drinking problem, and so I'm like, oh, that'll take you out, you know. that'll get you off in like Iowa or something. So yeah, I would just look for things outside of comedy that might hold them back. Because some people are really funny, but they just don't have that drive. So maybe I'd like see someone at like just a couple open mics throughout the week. And I was at open mics every single night, you know. So if they're only at a couple, I'm like, oh, they probably like are just kind of doing this for fun and not taking it as seriously. So those are the...
I completely agree. I just saw that movie Free Solo. It's about a rock climber.
Oh my gosh.
What's that about?
It's about a rock climber who uses no ropes to scale.
And he he broke the Guinness Book of World Records of climbing that one wall that nobody would dare to do, right?
Like, what, like, can you imagine with no ropes, like the kind of mental, you know what I mean? It's crazy. He does it in like 3 hours or four or something.
Yeah, that movie made my stomach hurt the whole time I was watching it. Wow. I was like,
anyway, so now we're rock climbing. Then you saw the pictures, like we're doing all the cut, you know, like bouldering and stuff like that. And girls at the gym are very like, they're very friendly and stuff like that. But then you don't want to, you have to be careful because you don't want anyone, like, you want to get the ones that are, that don't have the membership, right? You know what?
Same
thing. You don't want them to be a frequent, you know what I mean? Because then, like, what if you're there and then you're hitting on someone else and then they come?
Because you
want to
keep it casual.
You got to keep it casual, yeah. Or you switch up gyms or something. Like, oh, man, it's stupid. I'm talking, the gym's like right down the street.
Oh,
too.
No.
See, you're more brave than me because I think the world, just like the world of TV or even the world of podcasts, is so small. I wouldn't fuck around so hard in my circle because I don't want my name to be dipped in other conversations.
Well, that's why.
It's a prideful thing.
Yeah, no, totally. And people always gave me that advice early on. They're like, don't hook up with other comics. And, you know, I wasn't doing it as often as I might have made it seem. But I definitely, like, after a certain point, I was like, okay, I just want to, like, focus on this. Take it seriously. Like, now I'm at a point where, you know, I can't be doing that anymore. Because when you first start open mics, when you first start comedy, it's like there's no real, like, you're just doing it for experience, and there's no real, like, pressure. No one knows who you are at all. But
and
now
then would
it's
make,
like,
you nervous, let's say, with somebody you do hook up with and you end up liking them, then you see them next week, would it make you nervous to perform differently?
Yeah, absolutely.
See, that would do it to me too.
Yeah.
I tell, like, my current boyfriend right now, he sometimes wants to come to support me at certain things. I'm like, no, you can stay at home.
That's
you're
how
good.
I am.
I don't need you in the room because then I'm just going to be thrown off my game, you know?
But it's really nice, though, because I have had relationships with people who aren't comics. And there's some people who I feel like when they are at a show, I feel like myself and, like, I don't get that weird, like, I hope they don't see me differently after this, you know? So that kind of is, like, a big indicator of, like, who's...
Whether or not you really like them.
Yeah.
Got you.
Yeah.
Okay, open mics. On a 1 to 10, how batshit nervous do you get?
Dude, I want to do it so bad.
You should do an open mic. You should do it. Cross it off the bucket list.
But I'm not lying, though.
You're right.
It's something you want to do, you absolutely... I think anything that brings that type of... fear to you, don't get me wrong, as I'm saying it's nerve-wracking, I'm saying also do it. That's why I can't stand being a center of attention, and yet I'm a television personality and I have this career. I actually kind of get a high off of that rush every time. So Dennis, you absolutely should try it.
Well, I'm gonna go to more things, watch them more, you know, just kind of feel it out.
Just jump right in.
What was I talk about?
I had never been to an open mic. I had only gone to comedy shows, and the first open mic I did, it was after one of the shows I was watching. I asked one of the comics, I'm like, I don't know what to write about. I don't know what to do. Like, I have no idea. And he's like, just write out 3 to 5 minutes of whatever you think is funny. It doesn't have to be good. It probably won't be good. Just write out whatever you want to say. Whatever you think is funny, go to the mic here on Tuesday. So I went home. I was super inspired. I wrote the worst material in the whole world. It was so bad. And I went to the open mic, and I was so nervous. I was just shaking the whole time. Like, I took a video of it, which was a huge mistake. It's so painful.
My God. No,
so,
it's great.
And I'm
you
just
watch
shaking.
It. No, it's great.
I can't even listen to our podcast sometimes.
It's painful.
No, you got to watch how you perform. Go on. Then.
Yeah, so I'm just, like, shaking. And I didn't do comedy until I got back from college. Like, it took me a year and a half or something.
Oh, to recover from that shit?
Yeah.
Wait, how was the actual night? How was it?
It was.
Were you really that terrible?
No, but I wasn't good by any means. But it's also, like, it's an open mic. No one's going to remember. No one cares. A lot of people do terrible. Some people do well. So it's like, when people get nervous about open mics, I totally get it. But at the same time, after having done so many when I started, like, there's just a, like, after, when once I did my second open mic, I was like, this is what I want to do forever. I want to do comedy forever. So, like, I'm over being, like, afraid of it.
Wait, that's like snowboarding. They always say the first day of snowboarding is the worst. Yeah. It's so painful. You basically have to count on hurting your butt like crazy because all you do is fall on your butt.
Yeah.
And then the day two is when you start to really like it. But you have to, You have to. It's a rule to go through the sucky day. One.
I've never gone snowboarding, but I have this idea in my head that I would be really good at it. In my head, I'm like, I think I'm Shaun White.
That's crazy. So your first day was hell, and then your second day you climbed on board and you were like, this is it. This is me.
Yeah.
Interesting. I really respect it because I really do not see anything fun about it. You have to be naturally good.
Yeah. I don't know. It was just like one of those things where I was like, there's literally nothing else I could see myself doing. So I have to get used to this feeling and just overcome it. But it's always fun to do things that scare you. Like, I feel like that's when you really learn about yourself.
Yeah.
And like...
And don't invite anyone. Just go by yourself. Do it in rogue. Don't tell anyone you're doing it.
Don't invite anybody.
You know what's funny? We know my brother's been like does stand up, and we wanted for a while because we knew like every Tuesday we'd be like invite him out to eat, and then he'd be gone. He's like, no, I'm busy.
Let's be clear.
Who's busy on a Tuesday night?
We knew he was wanting to pursue. We knew he is wanting to pursue a life of comedy.
Whoa!
But he doesn't tell us. So through networks of our family members and nosiness, we found that he is going to open mics, and so we want to invite ourselves, but we're not invited.
Yeah. So we were gonna like follow him. We're gonna be so evil.
I was ready.
Like to go out of his house and wait till he leaves and just follow him to the. That'd be horrible.
But we would do it in a supportive way. Like I think he thinks that we're not gonna be supportive and we're gonna make fun of him. Obviously, we're not. We're going to clap him up and cheer him on and all that, and then also figure out is our brother really good at being a stand-up comic.
How long has he been pursuing it?
I know for a fact that he's been into this for the last, I would say, over the last 8 years, 10 years, because I remember him wanting to do it in the beginning, but something happens and then he goes and he does the traditional line of work that he's good at, which is editing and some other stuff, but then he always dances back to this.
Wow.
So that means it's in him.
And it's in him.
Yeah.
He's good, yeah.
Yeah, and he's really funny. He's the funniest in our family,
That long and you've never seen him?
No, because he hasn't invited us. This is our first time even talking about it. I'm surprised.
Well, no, we went one time. Like, okay, before I went to college, we went one time and—
Was I there?
No, you weren't there.
No, I wasn't
but
there.
But he invited all his friends and stuff like that. And then I guess the more of your people that are there, they give you more time to speak.
Yeah.
That was like 10 years ago that I got to see him.
How was he
speaking very fast because he was nervous. By the way, that's one of the complaints that we have.
I speak too fast. I hear it all the time.
You talk very fast.
That's interesting.
Yeah, you talk super fast.
I talk fast, I think, just because of who I am. You talk fast because you play your damn podcast on—
I play podcasts at 1.5 speed.
Oh my gosh.
So when I listen to
them, I'm the total opposite. I talk so slow.
Yeah, you mellow me out, man.
People think I'm like from the Midwest because I just like talk slow. Sometimes I have like a southern draw to my voice.
All right, listeners, I'll try to calm it down for sure. But I do get excited and I speak fast.
Yeah. I like it because I'm so used to just like— like it makes my brain have to work faster.
There's something wrong with my brain though, in the sense where when people speak at normal speeds,
you're like,
I'm so over it already. I'm already guessing what they're gonna say, and most of the time I'm right, but it's also not right to do that. Not right to jump people's gun because you can't fucking walk around acting like you know everything.
Yeah, that's what my sister's like. That, like, every time I talk to her, she'll just fill in the blanks.
Oh, I love those people. That's so fun.
And her and my dad are just like, they both do it, so they'll be talking to each other, but it's like Mad Libs. They're just both giving each other like adjectives and nouns.
I was told at the reel, like, one of my producers was like, I just want to give you a note, you kind of jump in and fill in on words on your co-host, which is so rude, so don't do that. But sometimes I see them, like, I see the word they're trying to struggle with and I'm just like, an osculate? I don't know. Like, I'm just throwing something, you know? So it's not good, but yes.
Yeah, that's nice, though, that you have someone who can, like, give you that note, you know?
Okay, so what you just said there is funny because I would have done the opposite when you said your open mic, don't invite anybody you know.
Yeah.
I keep around me very specific people who tell me exactly how it is. My agent, my manager, my mom.
Yeah.
It all comes from my mom. My mom is super, like, super, like, painfully honest, and I fucking love it.
Yeah,
because when people are painfully honest, you get to the crux of what the hell to do and how to adjust or whatever it is. And then sometimes I'm also like, great, that's what I wanted. You gave me a great feedback on what I want to be, so I'm going to continue doing that. It's really comes down to your confidence,
yeah,
right? To know what you want to be and how you come off. So if I were to do an open mic, I absolutely would have a specific person who would be honest with me. Even my assistant is really, really honest. Mm-hmm. And I have a meeting coming up that's super important. And I said, I want you to sit there in the back of the room. Because yeah, then there's certain things that go on and you wonder. So then the questions I would ask if I was doing an open mic would be, okay, was I terrible or was I like horrendous?
Yeah.
Or did people laugh at that joke or did it seem like it was a courtesy laugh? Like there's things you can ask because your perception isn't always accurate when you're in the moment.
Totally. And that's why I like record all of my shows and stuff like on a voice memo. So that way I can listen back to it and hear like certain things I'll like kind of repeat or like kind of make it a little bit more jumbly rather than like a flow of words. It'll be a little bit clunky. And so I listen back to hear that. And my family comes out, but like they don't know too much about comedy, so it's hard because they are supportive and they'll be like, you know, honest and real.
You're great,
Ali. You're wonderful. Yeah, but they
oh
can't
gosh
give me like yeah specific that yeah feedback.
Girl, that's white family.
Totally.
Get into the Asian family.
Totally. I know.
So
I'm down for dinner. I'll come over anytime.
You can write it out, and the way you say it, it's like it changes everything,
it's
man.
It's all about delivery, dude.
100%.
Yes. Yeah.
There's so many things that I write out, and I'm like, that's not funny at all. Like, there's no way that this is going to be funny. Like, I'll be reading it, and I'm like, is that even a joke? And then when I say it, I'm like, oh, I have to say it like this, and then it, like, really becomes what it is. But you can never really tell just by writing it and reading
yeah
it. It's totally different.
That's funny
that
you say that, because I notice that in interviews, when I read interviews from celebrities and you see a line that was meant to be funny, but when you read it in print, it's not.
Yeah.
And you can, and it really does ruin the joke sometimes. And sometimes that's why I think things get taken out of context.
Totally.
And people get in trouble for tweets and stuff like that, even though it's not funny, obviously, to laugh at groups of people, but sometimes they said it and it meant to be funny.
Totally.
You know? And then I also think that's why Mama Mai, my mom, she has a super heavy Vietnamese accent. So everything she says is just really funny, even if it's not that funny, the statement itself.
It's really
Do you
weird
notice that?
Yeah. And people actually like...
And she gets away with murder
I'm
because of that,
that
accent.
I'm surprised people listen to her so hard. Like it's very thick. And I don't know why people pay attention.
It is like, I mean, I feel like people are always fascinated by accents, especially like the Vietnamese accent is like so distinct.
Yeah,
and it's like,
because
like obviously I have an accent that's very like slow and kind of boring and just like blah, 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 blah. And then when you hear someone talk the way that you're describing your mom, it's like, you know, exciting. You want to hear what she's going to say next and how she's going to say it, you know?
Yeah. Do you ever think of taking on impressions or anything like that in your comedy so that do you pull in family members? Do you
yeah,
pull in
absolutely
the other people nuances?
Yeah, I definitely talk about my mom and my dad. I kind of talk about my sister sometimes, but I don't really do like an impression of them. If there was a joke that I wrote that I felt like would do better if I was kind of like trying to
emulating
be who I
them
was talking about,
yeah,
then I would totally do it. Like, I'm not opposed to it.
Right.
But as of now, it's like my material isn't, it would almost be weird if I like shifted into that during my regular
Interesting
thing.
And do you ask permission to pull in your family stories?
Good question.
Because that's a thing I learned this recent year.
Mm, yeah, my dad's not a huge fan of me talking about him, but
has
I also
he said that?
Yeah.
Our what did he say?
Too.
I want to hear what he.
But
yeah.
I also think part of him does like it.
Dude,
yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Right here. Lean into what you're saying.
My dad
I got a story
loves that I talk about him, and like he also he's like an introvert, but also loves being the center of attention at the same time. And so I know that I had my dad on my podcast, and he was like, "When am I coming back on?" And I'm like, oh my god. But then he's like in the stand-up, he's like, I don't know, like, you know, I don't want you to talk about me. But he also loves it. He like loves that people know his name.
See,
yeah.
Okay, so my dad came to LA to visit for the first time, came to my show The Real. I asked if he wanted to be in the audience.
Jeannie kept asking me, texting me, hey, I need to know if you want to bring dad to the show. I need to get the tickets for him and everything like that. Dad, do you want to be on the show? No, I don't want to be. They're going to put me on camera. I know they're going to film me. If I'm sitting in the audience, they're going to film me. They do that, right? You know,
yeah,
they just
Hey,
Jeannie Mai's father's. And he knew because he's seen other, and he knew he's going to get like sideswiped. she keeps asking so, because I don't text her back. Because he's telling me no, so
and,
I don't text
and
her back.
There's a physical dragging of the feet too. Dennis sees that he's reluctant to go change his clothes. He's not trying to look like eagerly ready.
Eventually, the day of, I'm like, Dad, get up. Like, I tell Jeannie, get the tickets. I'm gonna bring them because I felt remiss if we didn't.
Yeah.
So even if he's gonna be mad, I want him to come anyways.
Yeah.
Right. So Dad, let's go. Like executive decision, I make him get up. He's like, no, I don't want to. He's just really like
resistant.
He was really embarrassed, like really just didn't want to, like, I don't know. But I push him. I just get in the fucking car, dude, right? And I drive him over there. I'm hella tired. I get there and it changed.
All
like,
of a sudden, once he sees the lights and the cameras and the set.
When I show you the footage of this
dude,
man
he's oh my like God. This
camera.
With his camera.
Lights up,
he's like, no, he's filming everyone like, hey. Like this, you know, and I don't know. Everyone's like, hey, are you a Papa Mai? Right? Like that. And he's just like,
and he's taking it in like a celebrity when the camera scrolls by him. When I go, my dad's in the audience, always like, hey, you know, hi, lo. And he's like waving, but like a pageant wave and everything. Yeah. Comes home when the episode airs, he sends me screenshots of himself. And I'm like, yo. So it makes me think that although there are family members that are, yes, if they're stingent on it, they're like, no, I do not want to be on, like, respect them and don't tell stories about them. But then I always want to just throw it out there and include them a little bit so that if I see that little sparkle in your eye shine brighter because you got some attention, then I know you're in.
Yeah, totally. My dad's the exact
That's
same
your dad.
Way. Yeah, he just turns on when he's in, like, the right environment. He's like, I'm the superstar. It's like the Larry show. He loves it. Yeah. And my mom is always like, my mom's my number one fan. She's so supportive of me. She's like, say whatever you need to about me. Like, throw in anything. Like, whatever you need to say, say it.
That's sweet.
Yeah.
That's really cute.
I want to ask, what is the big goal? Like, in a comic's mind, what are, like, the I've made it moments for you guys?
I think, like, having my first special will be, like, a huge goal. And then I ultimately just want to be able to, like, tour my whole life and do, like, my ultimate goal is just to have, like, a very long, successful stand-up career. Mm. Everything else is just, like, an added bonus, you know, whether it's, like, a sitcom or just, like, a guest star on something or have my podcast travel, whatever it is. Like, all of that's just cool perks of being a comedian, but that's my ultimate goal, is just to have a bunch of specials, have a bunch of people enjoy my comedy.
Who's like a female comic that you've, or even male, besides your crush, who's a person who's doing the killing of it that you actually would love to emulate?
Yeah, I mean, people like Sarah Silverman are my favorites. I really like Morgan Murphy. I was watching her when I was in college because we have a similar voice.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, oh my God, it's possible to just kind of be like, you know, flat and like, you know, whatever. So that was really cool. Ali Wong, I really like. There's this guy, Andrew Santino, who I'm a huge fan of.
Yeah.
Fahim Anwar.
Yeah.
There's so many great comics. Chelsea Peretti. I'm like obsessed with Chelsea Peretti.
I don't even know these names.
Yeah.
That's impressive. It makes me actually want to look them up.
Yeah.
Because we live in LA, there's so many comics out here, and because I'm always out, I get to see all of these comics who aren't necessarily household names, but like people who I just admire so much.
Absolutely. Okay, so tell us where we can find your work, because I know I stalked you on YouTube, and I loved the stuff you have on YouTube.
Thank you.
You have a podcast. You also have more performances coming up. Tell us how to find
you. Yeah. So I'm starting to tour right now, so all of my show dates are going to be on AllieMukofsky.com/shows, and then I post everything on Instagram, which is not Allie Mack. And then...
Wait, Allie Makovsky, first off, is A-L-L-Y.
No.
Oh. Okay, spell these out, because Makovsky is kind of hard.
It is kind of hard. Yeah. It's A-L-I-M-A-C-O-F-S-K-Y.
Okay.
Yeah.
And your Instagram?
Not Allie Mack. So just N-O-T-A-L-I.
Why did you pick that?
Well, I had Ali Mukovsky, and then I tried, for some reason, I just like tried changing the username. Someone else took it over, and like, it was like one of those things where I was like getting trolled. And so someone else took Ali Mukovsky, and I think that they forgot that they were trolling me. And so now I just like can't get it back. It's just theirs, and they have like those Ray-Ban promotions that like spam. So yeah, that one's gone. So now it's just not Ali Mac.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Until the day comes when I can finally reclaim.
And your podcast?
Resting Bitch.
Nice.
Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah. So I've been doing that. You can listen to the episode with my dad, who clearly loves being on my podcast.
Yeah.
It's insane. Sure. And yeah, I just interview people who are comics or just friends that I know that I like to talk to. I interviewed one of the security guards at the Comedy Store because that's like the best club in the whole world. And just to like be someone who kicks people out of the greatest comedy club in the world, he's the best. So yeah, I just have a range of people on
that I like talking to. I love that. I want to tune into that episode already.
Yeah.
That's funny. Yeah. Oh, Allie, we wish you the best of luck. I'm so glad that you came by because I just love digging into the mind of another woman that's in such an intense field.
Also, my mom's going to be so stoked about this. She loves The Real.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Thank you, Mom. Well, we'll have to hook her up with tickets. She's got to come to the show.
She would love that.
Okay. Yeah. Awesome. Thank you for tuning in to Listen, Honey, and do support Ali's work, and we'll see you guys next week.